I don't know if you remember, you recall, but Esther in chapter 2 has become queen. The queen of the Medes and the Persians. King Ahasuerus, really Xerxes is how you may know him if you're a history buff. She's now the queen. Mordecai was the one who thought it would be a great idea. He set her up, set her in there, and sure enough, by God's grace, we have a Jewish girl, the queen of the land, married to the king, King Xerxes. Okay, and that's what took place. Now, in chapter 3, the reason I say it is because chapter 3 starts this way, after these things. That means, after what things? And of course, you want to ask, after what things? Well, after this whole deal with this beauty competition, remember, it was a one-year process that these girls went through to get ready to be looked at, to be tested for queenship. And of course, Esther is the queen. So now we read, after these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, or Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. Now we meet another major character in the book of Esther. We meet a man named Haman. He is promoted by the king to the position. This is what you and I, the position is basically what you and I would call a prime minister. So he's up there really far. He's in charge, you know. He was an Agagite or Agagite, depending upon how you pronounce it. You remember Agag and you remember all that. Well, basically, let's go back and remember, from the royal family of the Amalekites. Does that ring a bell with you? From the royal family of the Amalekites. The Amalekites, when the children of Israel were traversing through the wilderness, you know, on their 40-year trek, as they wandered in the wilderness, the Amalekites are the ones that would sneak up on them and attack them, but they would attack the rear echelon. The rear would be the older men and women and the children who would lag behind, and those that were sick. So the Amalekites were basically cowards. They were afraid of Israel, but they would attack and they would kill off the older people, some of the children, and some of those that were sick. And remember, after they got into the promised land and had been there for a while, the Lord said, I remember what Amalek has done, what the Amalekites have done. And so King Saul, I want you to go and kill every one of them, men, women, and children, all of them. Leave nothing alive, not even the animals. Do you remember that story? That was in 1 Kings. And do you remember that King Saul didn't do that? Do you recall that? He was disobedient and he didn't obey the Lord. He didn't do what God called him to do. Now, all of us, let's just be honest, we can all understand that, can't we? I mean, I've been obedient once or twice. Have you? But most of the time, don't we come out being a little more disobedient? And I did what God told me to do. Well, how come this? Well, yeah. Well, how come that? Well, okay, don't get personal. And so when King Saul comes back after this raid on the Amalekites, there are Amalekites that are still alive. And Samuel says, I don't get it, Saul. Why don't you do what God said? I do what God said. If you did what God said, how come I can hear sheep in the background and oxen? How come I see King Agag? And you know, how come there are still some alive? I don't get it. You didn't obey God. Yes, I did. I did everything he told me. Well, everything except. Does it sound like us? You obeying God? Well, yeah, except for just a few short little items. If King Saul would have done what King Saul was commanded to do, Haman wouldn't be alive. Haman wouldn't even exist. Got it? He wouldn't be there. He is from the royal family, King Agag. He's an Agagite.
Haman shouldn't be there. If Saul would have obeyed the command of the Lord, this man would not be here in this position. But Saul did not obey. And we see that disobedience to God's word, it may bother you a little now. But you notice that it really has repercussions that don't just stop here and now. They go on and on, don't they? They reach to your family, to your friends, maybe to your children, maybe to your grandchildren. You notice? And so here we have, now we're way on down the road. The children of Israel have gone into captivity. They've been there 70 years, time is up. Some have already gone back into the land. Now here you are in Babylon, in this area, and you've got an Amalekite who is in a position of authority. And the Amalekites are cowards, and they hate the Jews. You're not surprised, are you? Do you understand now why God said so many years ago, destroy all of them? Had you done that, you wouldn't have this issue today. Well, it continues to be a problem now for the children of Israel. Look at verse 2. Because now Haman is advanced and he's set his seat above all the princes that were with him. He's a prime minister. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate. Hey, do you remember where Mordecai works? Do you? Didn't we read in the last chapter that Mordecai got a new job and he worked there as a judge in the king's gate? Well, let's read it again. All the king's servants, that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Trouble. Mordecai got himself, probably because Esther was queen now, got himself a good, solid judge's job sitting in the gate of the king, taking care of the matters. Well, now you've got Haman, who happens to be a Amalekite, who is now overseeing as prime minister, and he would come through the gate how often? Well, for sure coming into work and going home each and every day. Never mind lunch times and all the other trips he might have taken. So through the gate quite often. And who worked there as a judge sitting at the gate? Mordecai. And the Bible tells us the king sent out word that he had appointed a new prime minister, and here's the command. Everyone was to bow before this new prime minister and recognize his position. Now remember, Mordecai is there. He has a position too as a judge at the gate. So in Mordecai's position, he was required to bow down and pay homage to Haman, but he refused. You think that's going to cause trouble? You've got an Amalekite who hate the Jews. You've got a coward in a position of prime minister. You think you'll have a little trouble? Oh, I think so. Mordecai was required to bow and he didn't. Now, I'm liking this guy more and more as this book goes on. Aren't you? First, I was a little worried about him because he shouldn't be here. He should have gone home with everybody else. But I like this. Mordecai, I'm liking this guy. I mean, I got to give him this. He doesn't bow down to an Amalekite. Why? Because he still recognizes himself to be a Jew. Are you with me? He still knows who he is and where he comes from. And he knows who his God is. And you see, he recognizes he's a child of Israel. Why do I say that? Because the Lord commanded his children that the children of Israel were not to bow to any except to God. Remember that? Not to bow to any except to the Lord God. They couldn't even make an image and bow to that. No image, no man, no nothing. They only bowed to God. Now, I'm liking this Mordecai a little better as the story starts to unfold here, because he knows what he's really about. Although it looks like he may have forgotten for a while, he knows.
Now, it had to be very obvious. Let's just get the picture. You're the prime minister. You're coming through the gate. Everybody bows down except that one little Jewish man. I mean, he stands out in the crowd because every time I come in, everybody bows. He's the only one that doesn't. Every time I go out, everybody bows. He's the only one that doesn't. And one of those Jewish guys. Everybody bowed down except Mordecai. Now, Mordecai has to know that this is going to cause some kind of trouble. He has to. And so I like the attitude. This is what God would require of me. This is what I'll do. You know, it's not going to be pretty. That's the way it's going to have to be then. Don't you like that attitude? Oh, if we could get it over here. If we could get it into our own lives, into our own hearts. This is what the Lord would have me to do. And if others laugh, oh well. This is what the Lord would have me do. And if others mock or condemn, oh well. If it causes trouble, well, that's just the way the cookie bounces. Look at verse 3. Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said to Mordecai, "Why transgressest thou the king's commandment?" Now it came to pass, when they spoke daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. Oh, here it goes. You see, he's in the gate as a judge. That's his position. Probably because Esther, his cousin, is queen. And he doesn't bow. And each time he doesn't bow, Haman notices it. But everybody else notices it too. And finally, the servants who are working there ask him, "Mordecai, now how come? Why don't you bow? I mean, we're told we have to." The position he's in, we're supposed to reverence, we're supposed to honor it, we're supposed to bow. But you don't do it, how come? Mordecai says, "You know, I can't. I'm a Jew. I'm a child of Israel. I'm a son of Abraham. I can't bow. My God forbids it." So they told Haman. Look at verse 5. Well, wait, before we go on. The Jews would say this, because he told them he was a Jew. "We worship the only true and living God. No idols, no images, no man. We worship the living true God. That's who we worship. And I like it. He stands for God. Even though God is not mentioned in the book of Esther, notice he says, the reason I don't bow is I am a Jew." He just said they understood exactly what he meant. I am a worshiper of the true and living God, and he forbids it, and I will not bow down and worship. I will not bow down before Haman. Now he's got to figure. Mordecai, now that they know he's a Jew, they probably knew before, but now when he explained it to him that way, he's got to figure that this is going to cost him his job, at least. Maybe his life, but at least his job. He takes a stand for God, and so you know there's going to be a price to pay. And Jesus would tell you and me, count the cost. Don't just follow me because you got nothing better going on today. If anyone will come after me, in other words, it's a will, a choice, a willingness. If anyone will come after me, let that person first deny themselves. Second, take up their cross every day. And third, follow me. Count the cost. And then Jesus will tell us in the Gospels there, he'll say, no king goes to war with another king until he first sits down and determines what kind of army does he have? What kind of armies do we have? In other words, you're counting the cost and see if it's wise to go to war or is there another path we should take? He says, what person would set out to build a bridge and get halfway through the project and find out he's out of money and out of material? He should have sat down and counted the cost. Christian, have you ever done that? As Mordecai here knows this is going to cost something,
Have you yourself, have we sat down and said, you know, I'm a Christian now, so it's going to cost something. Deny myself, Jesus said, take up a cross, follow me. It's going to cost me something. Am I willing, as I sit down and think about it, am I willing? What if God calls you somewhere far away, like Mexico? What if he does? What if God calls you to stand up for him at work, where everybody says, you can't have that Bible here? What if he does? Have you counted the cost? They could say, you're fired. They could say, if you keep that up, you're fired. That's the old pressure point. You know, let's put a little pressure on them. We'll get this Mordecai to fold. At school, they could laugh at you. You could even fail classes. I know some Christians who have, in high school and in college, who have stood up for what they believe and had to take a failing grade because of it. Have you counted the cost? Mordecai stands up for God here, and he's got to figure there's a cost. And so we say, yay for you, Mordecai. Right on. Even though he's here in Babylon, he knows he belongs to the Lord. I'm a Jew. I can't do it. I can't bow. When Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow, nor did he reverence him, then Haman was full of wrath, very angry. Why? Because everybody has to bow to me. I mean, that's what they're going to tell his wife later on. That little Jewish man won't bow. I mean, I've got everything I've ever wanted, all the money, all the food, everything I ever need, but that one guy won't bow. Whiner. So he then sought, or I'm sorry, he thought scorn to lay hold or to lay hands on Mordecai alone. For they had showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. He's so mad. That one little Jewish man won't bow. You know what? I'm prime minister, and you need to bow, and he won't. And that makes me angry. I need to get him. And so he's thinking, I'll get him. But then when he's told, hey, the guy's a Jew, he goes, all right, even better. You know, instead of just getting him, I'll get all the Jews, because the Amalekites hate the Jews. I'll just get all him and all his people. I'll get rid of all of them. These guys, I'll show them. You don't bow before me, you'll pay. Haman's pride is hurt. You know, had he been a man of responsibility, had he been a wise prime minister, you know what he would have done, don't you? If you've got the entire kingdom and everything you want and everything you need, you could ignore that little bitty man, couldn't you? Couldn't you let that go? Not this little coward. No, his pride. There's one who won't do it. I'm going to get all of them. We're going to kill him. That's just the wrong way to do that, because when you touch the apple of God's eye, you know you're going to make God move. Well, Haman thought, first I'll just get Mordecai. I'll show him. Because he's so angry, he decides, you know what? No, the better thing to do is to destroy all the Jews in the kingdom. That's going to teach Mordecai not to mess with me. At least, that's what Haman thinks right now. He's going to destroy all the Jews that live in the kingdom. Now, do you remember that we learned in chapter 1 there are 127 provinces in this kingdom? This is a huge kingdom. This is not just this little bitty place called Babylon or Shinar or the plains of Dura only. No, this is the entire Medo-Persian kingdom he's talking about. It's a huge outfit. You know something? Many have tried to exterminate the Jews, haven't they?
I mean, Haman is not the first one. He's not the first one to come up with the idea. Throughout history, it's the devil. The devil's been trying to exterminate the Jews. The devil started with Abraham himself, and he hasn't let up yet. He started way back before that, but you get the point. Hitler tried to exterminate the Jews. But today, Hitler and his group, they're gone. You see a little flare up here or there of little silly things, but basically they're gone. And the Jews went to their funerals. The Jews still remain. Yet there are people who continue to try to exterminate the Jewish people. For instance, the Palestinians today, Hamas and the Syrians and et cetera, Iraq, Iran, and you know, you have the whole Middle East. They've got a plan to exterminate Israel. Do you know it won't work? Oh yeah, many of the Israelites during this great tribulation that's coming up will be persecuted and suffer. But you know they won't destroy Israel. God promised they wouldn't, and they won't. Well, it's one of the most amazing miracles throughout history, by the way. God promised, and God has and will keep his promise. One of the most amazing miracles throughout all of history is that the Jewish people are still alive. That they're still alive. Many have tried to destroy, the Jews remain. God promised that he would take care of them, that he would bless them, that he would bring them back to their land. And he will do that. In spite of Haman. Well, let's just see what happens. In the first month, verse 7 says, that is the month Nisan, some people would say, which would be our March-April time frame. In the 12th year of Ahasuerus, they cast Pur, that is in our language, they cast the lot. Kind of like, you know, throwing the dice. Before Haman, from day to day and from month to month to the 12th month, that is the month Adar. Every day, this Haman is so angry. Now, of course, every day he goes in, won't bow. So every day he goes in, he's mad, and they cast lots. They roll the dice. Is today the day? When should we kill him? We're looking for the day. We're looking for the month. Hey, come on, seven. And they're casting these dice, the lot. Every day, people would bow down except Mordecai. Haman continued to grow angry. He'd have the magicians cast the lots to see which day was the best day to exterminate all the Jews in the land. The month was chosen. I already read ahead a few verses. The month was chosen. The 12th month, corresponding to our February-March time frame. The day chosen by casting the lots was the 13th day of the month. Some might say that's unlucky. The 13th day of the last month of the year, that's what the dice, that's what the lots said. That's going to be the time to kill all the Jews. You know, the Bible says that man throws the dice, God decides the number. Man flips the coin, God decides what it's going to land on. So I think God's in control here. The 13th day of the last month of the year. That's when, as they cast lots, that's what Haman was told. That's the best time to kill them all. Okay. And Haman said to King Ahasuerus, verse 8, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom. All 127 of them. Their laws are diverse from all people. They're really different. Neither keep they the king's law. Therefore, it's not for the king's profit to suffer them. In other words, to keep putting up with them. It's doing you no good putting up with them, king. If it please the king, verse 9, let it be written that they may be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have charge of the business to bring it to the king's treasuries. Okay, you got a guy that's a coward. You got a guy who hates the Jews. You got a guy whose pride is hurt, and he's going to get back at everybody by killing every Jew that lives in the Medo-Persian Empire. By the way, guess where Jerusalem is? It's in the Medo-Persian Empire, isn't it? Remember, they've rebuilt the temple. They've rebuilt the walls. They're rebuilding the city. There are about 50,000 of them. So you see, when he says all the Jews in all the provinces, we're talking all the Jews. He wants to exterminate the Jewish race.
So he brings it to the king's attention. And this is how you talk to the king. You know, since I'm the prime minister and you put me in this job, I've been noticing something. And I just want to run it by you. I mean, you're the king, so whatever you say, right on. But I got an idea. You know, there are a bunch of people. He can't say to the king, I'm mad because there's this little Jewish guy. He won't bow. There's one guy that won't bow. I'm mad now. He don't want to say that'd be embarrassing. So he says, you know, king, there are people that live in the provinces. They're scattered throughout all the provinces. They're living in your land. And, you know, they're really different from us. They don't obey the laws that you make. They live under different kind of laws. They're the Jewish people. You've heard of them. They live under the laws of their God, the living God. They call him the one and true, only true God. And so they don't, they're not benefiting you at all. They don't live like you want them to. Hey, by the way, were the Jews living according to the laws of the Medes and Persians? They were. For the most, except for where the laws went against, specifically against what God called them to. I mean, when it was time to pay their taxes, they paid their taxes. When it was time to do this or that, they were doing this or that. But you see, you got a guy who hates the Jews. They don't obey your laws. They obey the laws of their God. Since they don't listen to you, they're a danger. You got a problem here, King. Luckily, I spotted it. And so they must be exterminated. We got to get rid of them all. Although they haven't been a problem up to this moment, the king's been king for a while now, and they haven't been a problem at all. Now Haman says, oh yeah, they're a problem. You know, you may not know it, but you got a problem. I do? Things seem to be going fine. All the provinces are under control. No, no, you're really having a problem here. He convinced the king that these Jewish people were defying him. They're a problem, and killing them will bring lots of prosperity to you. Now he had just, remember, chapter back, had fought a war and it didn't go well. The Greek armies are coming. It didn't go well and it was costly. And so here's a way you might be able to fill up your coffers. Well, what are you talking about? Well, let's see. We'll kill every Jew and we'll confiscate whatever they have. All their money. If they own land, if they've got property, or if they're running businesses, we'll just confiscate everything they have and we'll put it in your coffers. Man, that'll bring you quite a bit of money and quite a few Jews scattered around this land. Make you richer than you are already. Think about that. Confiscate all their property and all their goods, all their income. It's a win-win, King. It's a win-win. It's a no-brainer. Let's kill them. Now, you would think the king would be smarter than this. But you see, flattery. You know, King, you're the king. You're in charge. And you know, we all want to do what you say, but there are certain people who don't. Yeah, really? Who are they? Who are they? Well, I'm on your side. I want you to know. And I got this idea. Let's kill them. Well, I don't know if I want to kill them. Oh, no. If you kill them, you confiscate their stuff. All their money, all their business, everything. It's yours. I mean, you know, you could use the money. It's a good idea. I mean, everybody around comes out ahead. You don't have the problem in the land anymore. You got a little bit more money in the coffers. Let's do it. So what does the king say? Foolishly, the king took his ring, verse 10, from his hand, gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the Jews' enemy. The king gave him his ring. Does that mean they're engaged? No! When King Xerxes takes off that ring and gives it to Haman, this ring was the signet ring. It would be pressed down into soft wax, and it would act as the king's signature. And so giving it to Haman, Haman could now sign off for the king. In other words, the king's saying, do what you got to do, man. Great idea. Let's go for it. Just your prime minister, take it, and anything you sign is consider it signed by me. The signet ring marked in the wax there. Any order the king's signet stamped on is law, and it's law immediately. And remember, the law of the Medes and Chaldees can't be reversed. Remember, we learned that in chapter 1. When they said, get rid of the queen, dump this girl. Once it's made law, you can't change it back. Well, he gives the ring to Haman. Clearly, the communication is this. You've got complete authority in this matter. I'm going to leave this with you. You're the prime minister. Take care of it. You handle it.
The king basically, I think, is saying, good idea. I could use the money after the wars we've been fighting, and I don't need any hassles in my kingdom. And you're out there probably more than me. And so if you say it's a problem, okay, it's a problem, and let's just do it. Go ahead and exterminate all the Jews. Kill them. Verse 11 says, king said to Haman, the silver is given to you. The people also do with them as seemeth good to you. Whatever you think, do it. Kill them. Then were the king's scribes called on the 13th day of the first month, and there was written according to all that Haman had commanded unto the king's lieutenants and to the governors that were over every province and to the rulers of every people of every province according to the writing thereof, to every people after their language in the name of King Ahasuerus was it written and sealed with the king's ring. In every province, all 127 of them, in every province, the law went forth. And the letters were sent by posts. That would be the mailmen, male women, on horseback or camel or whatever however they traveled, donkey. By post into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. So the law is this. In the last month of the year, on the 13th day, kill every man, woman, and child that is a Jew. In every province. Destroy all the Jews, all men, women, and children. It's an official decree. It's an official law. The law of the Medes and the Persians. Okay, think about that. Can be reversed. The law is now in effect. Can be reversed. Where's God? I don't know what you'd be thinking if you were Haman, but I know what you'd be thinking if you were a Jew. The law comes out, and here's the news. You know, in about a month, we're going to put all of you to death. You know, have a nice afternoon. If you need anything, call me. We're still neighbors. Well, until next month on the 13th, then you all have to die. And what would you be thinking? Wouldn't this be a great time for the Lord to come back? Wouldn't this be a great time for the Messiah to show up and deliver us and set up his kingdom? Don't you think that now, Christian? When you see some of these laws and you think, oh, good grief, there's another strike against us. What are we going to do now? Where's God when you need him? You think God's working? God's working. Remember, the lot is cast, but the Lord determines the outcome. Well, the law went forth. Now, keep in mind, these 127 provinces consisted of, just take a look at your world map in your head, if you have one in there. India, all of Asia, down through the Fertile Crescent, which would be the Middle East, there where you've got Babylon, where you've got Syria, where you've got Israel, where you've got Egypt, where you've got Jordan, Saudi, etc. Think about that. All the way over to the Mediterranean Sea. The kingdom also included some parts of Europe, all of Asia Minor, reaching into Africa through Egypt and down into Ethiopia. Ethiopia was so large it covered Ethiopia and Sudan. Sudan is the largest country in Africa. So that's a huge area. So you've got this entire Medo-Persian kingdom. And on the last month, the 13th day of the last month, every Jew, man, woman, and child, will be put to death. It has now been made official in the law. Think the Jews might have been a little nervous? Oh, come on. Yeah, I think so. Christians get nervous pretty easy, I see. I get emails, just panic emails. Got to sign this. Here, send this on to five people you know because Congress wants to do away with Rhode Island. You know, and you think, come on, are you sure they really want it? You know, I try not to pass those things on because some of them are a little strange. But Christians do panic, don't they? This is going to become a law. We're all going to have to eat dirt and never wear shoes and can't wear. Don't you think God's in control, Christian? Don't you think God knows? And don't you think he's got a plan? And don't you think, do you really think they've really backed him into a corner and he's going, oh no, oh no, oh no, I forgot about, oh that, oh, oh that, I forgot, I had that law, I know he can't bow now, and oh no, oh phew, I'm glad Esther's in there. Do you really think that it worked that way, or do you think God had it all set up to begin with? You wouldn't have this problem, everybody, if you'd obeyed God to begin with. And God could have said, I told you. But instead, he says, don't worry. I promise I will take care of you, and I will. Write it down somewhere, Christian. All the Jews living in the kingdom, which included Israel, were to be put to death on the 13th day of the 12th month. Verse 14. The copy of the writing for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, that they should be ready against that day. The posts went out, being hastened by the king's commandment, and the decree was given in Shushan, the palace. And the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city Shushan was perplexed. Shushan is where the palace was. It's just a little bit southeast, kind of Babylon, the city itself. There in the country of Babylon, today modern-day Iraq. City of Shushan. That's where the king's palace was. So right outside the palace. The people are confused, perplexed, baffled, bewildered. The law didn't make any sense. I've been living, you know, Mordecai, he's been our neighbor since I was born in that house, and he's been our neighbor since then. He's an old guy. And he's never been anything but nice. This law is confusing. What happened? What happened throughout the land that these Jewish people need to be put to death? I mean, it confused the common people. Because the truth is, there was no problem. There was no problem. And the people knew it. I think the king Xerxes knew it. But the idea of getting a few extra bucks, and he thought, okay, let's do it. And Haman, remember, he's just an angry coward who wants to, you know, and prideful, and just wants to get this whole thing taken care of. He wants to be bowed down to. The Jews were not traitors to the crown. They were honest citizens. They worked hard. They earned their living. They hadn't caused any sort of uprising or real trouble. The ones that didn't want to stay, when they were given permission to leave, they left. 50,000 of them went. Others chose to stay, and they're not there running black market sales or some kind of, I mean, it's confusing. So now the decree comes out all across the land to kill every Jew, to kill all the men, the women, and the children. And it bothers the people. The last verse says that the city was perplexed, meaning it's confusing to it. It's bothering the people. But notice something. It doesn't bother the king, and it doesn't bother Haman. Notice that? See that last verse? It doesn't bother them. It doesn't bother them. What do they do? King Xerxes. It doesn't bother. And sure doesn't bother Haman. This is his idea. They sit down together, and they have a few drinks that evening. You know, sitting down just talking over the day. Now, the word has gone out. The law is now gone out through all the provinces. We're going to kill the Jews on the 13th day of the last month of the year. It's going to be a big day, little buddy, but it's going to be a big old day. Maybe they'll make a celebration out of it. The king doesn't know yet that this is going to affect his own household. He doesn't know that yet because Esther hasn't revealed anything. But the king should be smart enough to, you know, simple math, 2 + 2. If Esther is Mordecai's cousin, and Mordecai says he's a Jew, Well, now, wouldn't you think that the king would be able to even figure that even a king should be that smart? But not yet. Not yet. He doesn't realize that this decree is going to touch his own house. In other words, what I mean is he does not understand what he's doing. He's being railroaded by an individual who's angry, bitter, jealous, prideful, hates the Jews. Should have gotten rid of those Amalekites. You know, now we're upset more with King Saul next time we see him. Because when you read through 1 Samuel, I remember Christians asking the same question. Why does God want Saul to kill all the men, women, and children? I mean, isn't that a little mean? I thought God was a God of love. Don't you know that when God says to do something, there is a great reason, and you may not realize it down the road for 100 years or 200 or 300, but you can believe that you should have done what he said to do. Now, Christian, let's bring that to today, and let's make it part of our lives for the rest of our lives. When the Lord tells you to do something, do it, even if you don't quite understand what it means, do it. Because down the road, you'll be glad that you did. But it might cause me to lose my job. It might cause me to get an F. I've always gotten A's. Well, God bless you, you need an F. You can't spell word with all A's. You need some consonants. It's good for you. Keeps you humble. God knows what he's doing. Let him be God. They're going to extinguish the entire population of the Jews in one day. Rome tried to do that, remember? Rome tried to extinguish the Jews. You know, the Spanish Inquisition, the biggest part of it, tried to extinguish or crush out the Jews. I've mentioned earlier, Hitler, he tried to exterminate the Jews. What's behind all of that? What's behind the hatred of Haman, of Hitler, of the Roman Empire, of the Spirit? What's behind it all? None other, I think you know, than Satan himself. It's the devil. This is the enemy of the children of Israel, the devil. All the hatred for the Jewish people today and all throughout history past, and all the hatred that will be coming up, is fueled by the devil himself. The goal of the devil is to stop God's promises. If he can even shut down one promise, then we cannot trust God anymore. True? If any of God's promises do not come to pass, then he cannot be God, a holy, perfect, righteous God. Isn't that true? So the devil's goal is to somehow, some way, shut this thing down. You are told, Christian, we are told, Christians, that our enemy, our adversary, is the devil. You are on a playing field, if you are into sports, you are on a playing field and you can't get off. You are in the game, whether you like it or not. Paul uses sports as an illustration quite often. Also, he uses military illustrations. And so, Christian, you are in a fight, and there are no non-combatants in this fight. You and I are in a war. It's a spiritual war, and you have an adversary. And you may say, well, I'm not mad at him. Doesn't matter. He's mad at you. And so it would be wise to listen to the Lord, to trust in him, and to, by the power of the Holy Spirit, obey him, wouldn't it? Because on our own, we're going to be cut to shreds. The devil's a better athlete than we are. He's a better military commander than we are. This is a spiritual war. And of course, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, remember? Powers, spiritual wickedness in high places. The devil is your enemy. The goal of the devil, stop God's promises. Stop God's work. Do you remember? The devil attempted immediately to stop what God was all about in the Garden of Eden. Genesis chapter 3.
let's shut down now what God's trying to do. God created man and woman that he might have fellowship with them for eternity. And the devil thought, let's just shut this down. When they were kicked out of the garden because of sin, there was a prophecy given in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, about Messiah. The first messianic prophecy is Genesis 3:15 in your Bible. So the devil, not knowing who this Messiah or how it was all going to work, makes sure, he thinks he's going to make sure, so he makes sure he shuts down the situation by having Cain murder his brother Abel. Abel offered to the Lord and was accepted. Cain wasn't. And so Cain murdered his brother. So see, this started a long time ago. He attempted to stop God's promises by having Cain murder Abel. Didn't work. We go on down a little further. I could show you point after point after point. You can see it for yourself. He had 10 brothers sell their younger brother into slavery to stop the dreams, to stop the promises that he was given, to shut down this thing. That's what the enemy had the brothers do. Of course, you remember Joseph tells his brothers near the end of the book of Genesis, you meant this for evil, but God meant this for good, to save the nation. And the devil's going, oh man, that bugged him. So the devil tried to have the baby Moses killed, remember? The deliverer. Remember all the babies were to be put to death, but Moses' mom put him in a little ark, not the big ark, but the little one, floated him down the river there, and Pharaoh's daughter picked him up. You remember? Oh, the devil was bummed at that. So he then attempted to, once they left Egypt, all the children of Israel, he attempted to stop them from entering into the promised land. He scared them. And he attempted to stop God's promise of taking them into the land. And many of them were put to death, but yet the Jews still entered into the land. He also attempted to stop God's promises by making sure David would never become king. Do you recall that for 10 years of David's life, he had to run from Saul, and every day he ran for his life from Saul. David was so depressed at one time, he even makes the statement, I know that Saul will catch me and will kill me. I know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. Did it ever happen? That proves to you that you can make a negative confession and it won't come true. So go for it if you're bummed. I know God hates me. No, he doesn't. Stop it. He also tried to stop the birth of Jesus Christ. Once he was born, he tried to put him to death. And when he finally got him to the cross, Satan, thinking, I have finally done it. We've shut this thing down. Jesus gave up the ghost, shed his blood for the sins of the world, died, gave up the ghost, was buried. And on the third day, he rose again. And Satan thought, this is out of control. And you notice that he's been trying to crush the church since its inception, hasn't he? And when he finally couldn't beat them, he did a very wise thing and he joined them. And so now you find him in the church. Some of his practices, some of his teachings, some of his ways, you find in the church. We see chapter 3 and we see Satan attempting to destroy God's people. That would really fix the promise, wouldn't it? We have to stop there, but this is a short book. Go through and read it. It's kind of fun to see exactly how God does this, because you're thinking, oh man, how is he going to pull out of this one? Well, the good thing is God will keep his promise. Christian, he will keep his word with you. Trust him. Read your Bibles. Stay in fellowship. By the power of the Holy Spirit, walk with him. And the Lord will continue to work. And others will come to a saving knowledge because you serve the Lord. Let's bow our heads together.